Hey, and welcome to an all-new episode of the DeviantArt Podcast Live. I'm your host, Matt Buholtz, GG Matt B, and today we've got quite the show for you. We have a stellar guest. You may know this lead concept artist from their work on Adventure Time and Clone Wars, or maybe for their YouTube channel, Animators vs. Games. Today, we've got DJ Welch, so I'm going to join them in right now. All right, let's see if this works. Here it comes. The exciting part of technology. Hey, what up, DJ?
How's it going, man?
let me reframe myself a little bit so that we can be even here. All right. There we go.
Well,
how you doing today?
Good. I've never done a live with anyone before, so this is interesting. I was like, oh, where's the two heads? What's going on? And then, like, there's the time delay, so, like, you're announcing me, and then it's like, oh, you're up. I'm like, oh, okay.
Exactly, right? So what I would love to do, just so that we get clean for the edit, if you can reintroduce yourself, that would be awesome, and we'll get nice and clean.
Okay, cool. Hi, I'm DJ Welch. I'm an artist, concept artist. I work at places like Lucasfilm, Instagram. I'm currently at Twitter as the art lead, and I'm excited to join you guys today.
You've done it all, man. Like, your work history is crazy.
So
while you were watching at the beginning, did you see anyone in the chat that you knew? You seeing some?
I haven't been looking at it.
that might be for the best. Sometimes you got
I'm just gonna cover that up
and then not get nervous
and read it.
Well, don't worry. We've got a producer who's pulling all the quotes for us and all the questions. So,
okay, cool.
People watching, a couple things. One, ask your questions so that we can do a Q&A at the end. And two, we're doing a caption contest. There's a link in our bio. There's a link in DJ's bio. And you can win a Wacom One tablet for captioning a piece of DJ's art. So make sure to give that a look, because that's something really handy right now.
Make me laugh, guys. Comedy.
There you go. A little insider tip, because you guys watch the podcast, you know, make it funny.
Yeah. Oh, Ava, what's up, Ava?
There you go. See, I knew that your people would be in here with you.
Yeah.
So I do want to go and let's just get everyone used to you and kind of go through some of your work history and talk about, like, how you got started.
Okay. I started drawing when I was about 15, which is pretty late, but it kind of helped in a weird way. So I started drawing for a site called Newgrounds.
I remember Newgrounds. I mean, they're still around, but I remember spending a lot of time on Newgrounds.
That was like OG animator heaven. Like, I was drawing with a mouse. I'd get carpal tunnel in this hand and switch to this hand because I didn't get a tablet until I was 18. Put up some cringy animations, but, you know, really got the bug in, like, high school from, like, a teacher who, like, introduced me to, like, all these cool programs that really got me interested in art. From there, like, I was planning on being an engineer. Like, I'm like
what,
really good
engineering
at math,
were you
really bad
into?
At spelling, can't spell anything, but, man, I was in calculus in, like, 11th grade. Like, I was good at that. What did you say?
What branch of engineering?
I was probably going to go into civil. I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah. I was really excited about it, but weirdly enough, my mom talked me into art school.
That, I think you're the first person I've ever heard so that angle.
I know.
It's like your parents are like, hey, please, anything but art school.
Yeah. No, my dad was like that. He's like, no, go be an engineer. And my mom's like, you really like art. You keep locking yourself in your room and doing art all day. So why not do that? And I was like, okay, yeah. And then I applied to art schools, got into the Academy of Art in San Francisco and really loved
it. Yeah. And San Francisco, a great place to be creative in.
It was awesome.
That environment is just, you can chill and find some good spaces to create.
Oh yeah.
I've spent many an hour hopping coffee shops there.
Yeah. Like, and it's funny because, like, my core group of friends, like Zach Oldenkamp, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Carlo Ortiz.
We
all live together in San Francisco in a one bedroom place. It was so small, but we were all poor. But we all made it, which it was really cool to see. Like, we all made it in the industry. Everyone's artwork kicked butt. It was just awesome.
It's that hustle.
Yeah. Yeah. We were all, like, instead of going to parties and hanging out with people, we were all, like, studying and doing hand studies and master copies and stuff. So, but yeah, so
from there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, from there, art school, I started working pretty early. So I was always like on DeviantArt doing like artwork. Like I was putting my own spin on fan art. Like I started off doing like this older Avatar series kind of illustrations. And it was kind of because in art school and in the industry at that time, people weren't using tablets. They're still doing traditional art. Yeah. So I had to learn how to do digital art on my own outside of school. And I kind of used fan art and DeviantArt to kind of like push me in that direction and like kind of gain an audience and start doing conventions. And from there, like at conventions, I found out Cartoon Network was doing a portfolio review. This was at Anime Expo. And I didn't have a portfolio because I didn't really know what that was. And I just took all my prints, shoved them in there, ran over there and showed them my portfolio. And they're like, oh, yeah. You want to come on Firebreather as an intern? I'm what? Like, heck yeah. And that's literally how it happened.
from supportive parents for art school to this, you have the most unbelievable art career journey.
I will say, like, back then it was really hard to get into the industry. Now you guys are so lucky because, like, art directors regularly check ArtStation and DeviantArt and Twitter just looking for awesome artists to bring on. But, like, back then, it was like you had to get lucky. You had to get lucky or know someone or just, you know, your luck aligned with the stars and someone saw your portfolio in a pile and pulled you in.
Yeah, the universe has gotten a lot smaller. It used to be about where you were based out of. And now, especially in COVID times where most people are working from home, like it doesn't really matter where you are as long as you can work the right hours.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's totally true. Yeah, I mean, I'm in San Francisco and I've worked for a ton of different places, not here. But I love it here. It's expensive, but it's getting cheaper.
So from working at Cartoon Network, what was your next step? Because you're working on a lot of stuff there.
Yeah. So I was working on Firebreather with Peter Chung and this guy named Sung Hyun Ho, who's just an amazing story. So I wanted to work on Avatar so bad, but that was over by the time I entered the industry. And Sung Hyun Ho, he was the supervising director on Avatar season 2 and 3, which I thought was amazing. And he was the lead storyboarder on the show I was on. And I got to learn so much from him. He was so good. Like, if you look up his name and like the fight between Aang and Ozai, that last scene where like all the, where he has like Planet Aang going on and stuff, all done by him. His boards are amazing. It looks like animation the way he does it. But anyway, from there I went to freelance actually. I started working with a guy named Sean Galloway, Cheeks. Another
Cheeks is legendary.
Yeah, another big DeviantArt alum. He kind of it was weird because I was so young and like I had no business working for like all these amazing companies like Blizzard and just these amazing companies that Sean was kind of dragging me along on. Him and Orion Benjamin and all these guys kind of took me under their wing and started getting me these jobs, and I'd work for them, and it was awesome. I would work for like, you know, 5, 6, 7 freelance companies at the same time. We'd all be working on stuff. And it was lucky because I kind of look at like Sean, his style is so iconic. Mm-hmm. Spectacular Spider-Man. You can see it and you immediately know it's Sean. Mm-hmm. I'm a little different. I look at myself kind of like a chameleon kind of artist. Like any style I see, I can kind of jump into.
So let's talk on that for a second and just take a little tangent. Like, I think that's really interesting because so many people get caught up in this idea of you have to have a unique style and like a singular style, a lot of people believe. So being able to have the like capacity and the understanding to adapt your style to whatever you want to work on, have you found that beneficial for you?
So I always looked at it like there's more than two paths, but two paths of art is having that iconic style that really makes you stand out, and then possibly getting lucky and a showrunner or something sees your style and goes, that's what I want, or a video game or something like that. And you can kind of define an era, which is great having a unique style. But it can also be a double-edged sword if you can't get out of that style and your style ever becomes irrelevant, which sucks too. So it's good. Being an artist like me who can kind of look at styles and pick them apart and jump into them, has made it so I never don't have multiple job offers coming at me all the time. Like, because people know I could do storyboarding, they know I could do character design, background design. What do you want? And I could jump in there. And I've always found it more comforting to be able to do that. Not to say that I don't have my own style, which is kind of like this Amerime looking style, but you know, I do like that I can do other styles and help out when I where I can.
Do you find that's helpful then, like for your portfolio to have it be more diverse?
I've always found that. I know a lot of people, like the industry is very down in LA. Is very, you get stuck in one category. You're like a background drawer or like a character artist. You don't even color your characters. Another person colors your character. So up here in the Bay Area, you actually have to be a little more diverse. A lot more video game companies, Lucasfilms up here. And when you're in Lucasfilm, they actually expect you to know 3D. They expect you to know how to draw characters, backgrounds, vehicles, everything, which is really fun because then you get to jump in and do a whole bunch of other, a whole bunch of different like things instead of just being like, I'm drawing characters. I'm just drawing props. That's all I do for 4 months and then I'm out. So I really like that.
Nice. Yeah. I think it's always interesting because you hear so many people say like, when I, you know, want to go somewhere and pitch my portfolio, what should be in it? You know, should I really focus on one aspect? Should I try and match the art of the place I'm going to, you know, all sorts of different philosophies behind it. And each one has its success stories, you know? So I was like hearing what worked for individuals.
Like I always said, a good way to get in the industry initially was to do backgrounds because most people wanted to be like Viz Def on the character side. So if you did backgrounds or props and you did them well, you can get your foot in the door at Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network a lot easier than if you're trying to do characters because there's too many veteran good artists already doing characters and you'd want to hire one of them as opposed to taking a chance on a student who maybe doesn't know how to do turnarounds yet or hasn't really like gotten their skill up there just yet. So yeah, there's a bunch of different ways to organize your portfolio, but just making sure it's good and take out the bad stuff. You don't need a ton of things in your portfolio. If I came up to a student and, or a student came up to me and they had like 4 or 5 really good illustrations, I'd be happier seeing that than seeing, 12 and only 2 are good in there. And I'd be like, oh, okay. I see all the weaknesses and stuff. So just try and put your best stuff in the front.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, based on our previous talk, I think this is the time in your career where you started taking a little bit of time off from art, right?
Yeah. I mean, I did. I started doing acting. I started doing like background acting of like an HBO shows and Wives and Knives because I was like, I just want to do something different. And it's important to like consume and do different things to really help your storytelling and broaden your horizons. Because if you're just consuming the same thing as every other artist, your artwork's going to suffer. Your inspiration is going to suffer. So you got to push yourself to do things like publicly speak on a podcast
we found you in a weak moment. DJ needs a change of perspective. Get him.
Yeah, I'm trying to do more public speaking. But yeah, like you gotta do a lot of different things because it just helps your art and your storytelling, honestly. I started doing other things than art. Like I kept doing art as freelance and stuff like that because it pays way better than acting. But you know, I had an agent. I actually had a funny story with that. So with acting, I was kind of, this is super naive and rude, honestly, but I was looking at it like it was a luck-based profession, especially with TV, not theater. I came from theater. That's hard. Like you gotta like, with theater, you gotta memorize all those lines. Someone can like set you up wrong and you have to figure out how to still get to that line because it's important for the story. But like acting for TV, if you have a really good director and they have infinite cuts, they can make you look good. But not to say that like there's not super good actors out there that they're great. But I was very naive and I thought that. So I went to and talked to like a bunch of agents. And I went into an agency and there was like probably like 100 people there. And I was like, oh no. And then I sit down and they give me like slides to read,
yeah,
a paragraph to memorize in front of everyone, which I didn't want to do that at all. I was like, oh no. And I went and sat down, and luckily I was the second person there. So a little girl had to go before me because the agent was only bringing on a couple people. And they sat me down to talk about my resume. And I listed like things like, you know, I worked at Cartoon Network. I worked for DC Comics. I worked not as an artist, but as an actor.
Yeah.
I just basically padded my resume.
Yeah. Not your roles. You gave your work history.
And they're like, oh, wow. Okay. So what acting training have you had? And I'm like, well, I did acting for animators in school, which teaches you how to like do like gesture and movement. And they're like, oh, that's good. Cause like most people memorize the lines, but they don't move. And I was like, oh, mental note.
Yeah.
So I went up in front of everyone, started doing my thing. I didn't memorize the lines, messed up a ton of times, but I moved and I came out of that humbled and shamed and embarrassed. And I was like, well, and I called my mom and I was like, well, I guess I'm going to have more respect for actors now, because that was humiliating. Then flash forward 2 weeks, I wake up, they call me and they go, hey, we just want to tell you, we want to represent you. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, we picked you out of 400 people. You did a real good job. And I was like, oh, well, lesson not learned. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Way to reward that badge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's how I got into it.
That's awesome. So how do you think that those sort of outside experiences and those things that you push yourself out of your comfort zone to do help with your art, or what sort of ways did you see that impacting your art?
I mean, when you do, like, it's always important for animators to do acting anyway, because you got to think, like, a lot of animators have, like, you know, a mirror right there so they can see their face when they're acting on a line to really push things.
Yeah.
Expanding your, like, your viewpoint and reading and listening to podcasts and skydiving. I would never do that, but like doing that kind of stuff.
Terrifying.
I think it's just important because you learn and see things, and you see them from different angles, and you store that in your visual library. And man, when you're a storyboarder, like storyboarding already, in my opinion, is like one of the hardest jobs in art. You got to know cameras, you got to know action, you got to know pacing, you got just so much stuff. But like nowadays we're lucky we have like the internet, which is crazy to say, and like an infinite resources to look up stuff and so much reference. But back in the day, like storyboarders just used to have a cabinet and just images that they'd pull out for storyboards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that expanding your visual library helps the most with storyboarding.
I see a lot of hearts coming up whenever you mention storyboarders. So I think we got some storyboarders in the chat.
Yeah.
Hit the heart job. Button for all the hard workers who do storyboarding, because that's an intense job. Like,
yeah,
it's everything.
It definitely is. I mean, some of my favorite artists are storyboarders. So I just think they're amazing. And I think that like it's probably the place I feel the weakest.
It's such a challenge because it's, people look at it and they're like, oh, this isn't like beautiful art or, you know, finished art in a way.
Yeah.
But there's so much that you have to capture in storyboarding, from emotion to movement, in condensing it all down to the most important slice of that.
Clarity, man. That clarity.
Composition.
Like, yeah. It's so important. But yeah, I mean, there's such good storyboarders out there right now. I'm on Twitter every day looking at these awesome animators. Spencer Juan, I love that guy's stuff. Like, there's so many just killer storyboarders out there right now.
Yeah. Really quick, for people that are tuning in a little bit late, I just want to remind them about the caption contest we're running, where link in bio, you can caption a piece of DJ's art and have your chance enter to win a Wacom One tablet. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Can't get that tablet, guys. I didn't get my first tablet until I was 18.
I think what was your first tablet that you were like using?
I think it was like a 4x6.
Is it like the bamboo fun?
It was so small.
I think everyone did the like bamboo fun.
It was so, and I like, you know how like they have the touch sensor on the side? Like I put tape over that because I'm left-handed. And at that time, you couldn't do anything. So I'd have to tape it so I didn't constantly mess up my drawings.
Yeah, but
yeah, that was my first one, and then I got a big 12x12 tablet that honestly I was using up until probably a year ago, which is crazy. Yeah. And the only reason I upgraded is because Windows made it obsolete. Like they just stopped uploading the drivers, handling the drivers. So
one question, we're going to save most of the Q&A for the end. So leave your questions in the chat. We're pulling them. The one question that I saw cycle through is 1AM Bella asked, do you use references to help you draw? And you kind of just spoke on that about being able to use your face, being able to use your experience. Oh, yeah. So give a little bit of insight on your use of reference.
All the time. Like I will speak like reference is so important. I'll walk in, like if you look at my camera roll right now, you just see a bunch of pictures of me doing weird stuff with my hands and making weird faces to kind of like push acting. Yeah, reference is so important. Take it of you, take it of your friends, take it of your dog, your cat, get as much reference as you can. Start building up those reference folders. I have reference for styles. I have reference for trees I like, artists, how they handled like rain. Like I have reference for everything.
Oh yeah. That's a thing that I don't think many people speak on is reference for style is like such a huge thing that is like never spoken of.
Oh yeah. I almost have like a style board for myself, like my own art. Like I put together like pictures I like, things I have handled in ways I like, and I kind of just put that next to me on another monitor just to remind myself what I am.
That's really cool.
I have so many styles in my head. Yeah. I'm like, what do I like? How do I like handling things? I like the way this looks. And I jump to that a lot.
That's a really good tip. Like, yeah. I don't think I would have considered that for when you work on your own projects, making sure to have your own references there to keep you on track.
Yeah. Because it's so different. Like, if you go working on, like, you know, Adventure Time, and then you go down and you start working on, like, something that's more realistic, that's such a style jump. And you really have to like, stick to it. Like, you can't, at least for me, I can't just jump easily into both. I got to kind of, like, ramp up and look at it and be like, okay, this is what I'm doing right now. This is how I'm going to handle this. This is how I'm going to draw that hand or that foot or that eyelash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So I want to pivot a little bit from your time acting into talking about forming a brand and just kind of, you and I chatted about this earlier, but like really kind of using yourself and your energy physically and I don't know how you face the camera in a way to help with your art.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a gaming channel called Animators versus Games. Check it out, guys.
Yeah, check it out, for sure. Link will be below once we repost this.
Yeah, it's with a really popular animator called Alan Becker. He was the one who did Animators versus Animation, where the stick figures fight the UI. And then also my buddy The Odd Ones Out comes on every so often and joins us. But I was talking to Alan early on, and I was kind of thinking, like, he spends like a month on an animation and people get to enjoy it for like 4 minutes. And I would spend like, you know, 8, 5, 10 hours on an illustration. And someone looks at it for like maybe 20 seconds, goes, wow, nice. And then it keeps scrolling. And I was like, I kind of want a more of a one for one kind of enjoyment to my time usage kind of thing between me and my audience. Mm-hmm. Like, so now we do video, we're literally just playing video games. It's like a podcast where we're talking, making jokes, but we spend 20 minutes recording an episode. We get like, you know, 15, 20 minutes of content. And yeah. I really like that. And we have editors kind of handle all that, all the stuff we don't have time for. But I really wanted to have something that was a little more forward facing to my audience and gets people invested in who you are as opposed to just your content.
Why do you think it's important for people to invest in you as a person versus just your art?
I think it's important because I think it's important for your audience to know who you are. I think if people know who you are and where you came from and your story, it can like make people feel more attached to the artist and more interested in everything that they're doing. I know for me, when I look at like, certain fighters, I like MMA and stuff like that. I love hearing their story. almost more than watching their masterful performances in the octagon. I like knowing where they came from. I like knowing their struggle and seeing if it resonates with myself. And I think that I try and apply that same thought process with my art. I'm happy that so many people on my Instagram enjoy my art, but I also am very happy to see people enjoy watching me play video games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's important. Like what you're saying, especially with the sports analogy, like you look at like a team, right, that's playing, or an MMA fighter, and if you know that they've got like the Cinderella story or what they've had to overcome, there's such an extra level to everything that they do. You know, what does this punch mean to them? What does maybe
are they using doing it for their daughter? Is their daughter like, you know, sick with something and they need to win this fight and you're rooting for that guy or that lady to really win there? Are they, you know, there's the storytelling. That's what like people are interested in. Mm-hmm. It's not just the performance. And I think that same way you apply that to art.
Yeah. And with art, you might see that like, oh, I know this, this like skyline is Toronto and this artist like grew up there. So they must be feeling nostalgic, and you get those like extra layers, almost get like peek behind the, you know, the curtain a little bit when you get to know the person better.
It's also like a level of authenticity, I think, too. Like, and you can't, I mean, we're starting to see that more in Hollywood where it's like, hey, you don't just have like four white guys write a Hispanic woman's story. You make sure that there's some Hispanic women who grew up in that area to kind of make sure that she tells her own story too. And I think in that same way, adding that like authenticity to your art is important too. Like when you see like artists who did like Moana and stuff, they actually go to Hawaii. They actually look at that kind of stuff. And I think that's all just so important to actually make the finished product legitimate. Mm-hmm.
So for artists that are looking to start putting a little bit more of their personality out there and opening up a little bit of themselves to their audience, what do you think some easy first steps would be? Because that can be real intimidating.
Oh,
and the internet is huge. So what are some like
and
small
not a kind
things?
Place sometimes.
Sometimes horrible. You know, hopefully you find a real good community. But like when you're first starting, what are some steps that people can take to show a little bit of themselves while still like kind of testing the waters to be safe?
Yeah, I think it's so important right now specifically to kind of do that kind of stuff. Twitch, making sure you're streaming your art. I think you got to get out of there, get out there, guys, because I Rona hit and I had so many friends contact me about starting their own IP, making a comic book on like Webtoons or something like that, and like starting to diversify outside of the industry. Out of just working at ILM or doing like movies because they stopped for a while. So like they'd hit me up and ask like, what do I do? What do I kind of like focus on first? And I think that like just, it's so important, guys. No amount of preparation can get you ready for producing content with yourself online. And what I mean by that is even animators versus games. I bought a couch. I bought like a thing. I made everything look good. I did this animated intro, have quality cameras, and we're still learning. Like if I knew we're like a year and a half in, we got like 240,000 followers, but like now we're finally starting to see like the retention go up and people caring about our content because we can speak better. We bounce jokes off of each other better. Mm-hmm. And if you were to start a YouTube channel or a podcast or a Twitch stream, I would say just start. You're going to learn so much more doing it than watching it or studying it or preparing for it.
Yeah.
And then you can rebrand later when you know everything.
Yeah. Get that new username and then you're set.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, if someone is like, let's say they're introverted and they don't necessarily have that ability to present outward as easily.
Yeah.
What do you think that like a real easy like first sort of post out could be that would help them share a little bit about themselves without necessarily needing to be so performative?
There's so many different ways to do that, but I would say like just posting on your Instagram and maybe talking a little bit more about yourself, maybe letting people in, maybe telling them an interesting story about yourself, where your art journey kind of began, who inspired you, that kind of stuff. If writing's not my thing, I'm dyslexic super hard, so I have to do some other things. But I think there's a bunch of different places where you can show your audience who you are. And I think it's important to do that.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I've noticed that's worked really well for me getting to know artists before like I even talk to them, like if I know an artist is going to be at a con that I really like, there was a trend going that's like meet the artist, and people would draw like a character sheet of them and like maybe what's in their backpack and some little details like a character mock-up. Yeah. And that was so helpful to be like, oh, I know that this person like loves like Gundam models because they put it in their backpack, like, and now I have something that I can like talk to that person about or identify with them with, you know. It's a very minimal thing to do like physically, you know, like you're not having to go out there and act and perform and say here I am, but it's still but it still shares a lot. I'm nervous all the time. I'm like the Hulk, but it's nerves and anxiety.
Okay. I'm always nervous. like it's weird. Just the difference between like this is live.
So yeah.
I feel more nervous, but like, or like when I have to present something at work, because a lot of my job is like ideation and visualization. So I come up with an idea and then I show people how it could work and what I think engineers might want to do or use to kind of make this AR idea work. But I still get super nervous doing that. But like when I do things for like animators versus games, where it's just me and a friend, we're on a couch, like ignoring the camera, I'm just saying anything. My editor will cut out anything inappropriate we say. You like there's that barrier there.
Yeah.
That really removes the nerves and half of being on camera and like acting and all that is being able to just act normal, like being able to relax, deliver lines in an authentic way. Most of the time when you see someone jump on camera, that they look like they're acting, and that's what that kind of like makes them look like a kind of not as like good, because they're just so you know,
wooden
stiff.
Exactly. Yeah, they come in and they're very much about, I love art and the art is the best.
Yeah. Can you say that boring line again 4 more times? Maybe move your head a little more.
I love art is...
Okay, you know what? We're just going to fix this in post.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, yeah, it's about being authentic. And I think what you said earlier, just start doing it. And like, it'll get better. You'll be more comfortable. Like, you need that time of being uncomfortable and trying new things to gain the comfort.
That's such an important like life lesson. If you want to keep growing, you gotta get used to being uncomfortable, because every new thing you start, like, you know, once you're good at one thing, you can kind of apply those like lessons to it, like how you got good at that thing, through like study or practice or preparation or whatever, to get to that masterful level. But like when you start a new thing, you usually suck, and you suck bad, and you got to get used to sucking. And you see those little increments getting a little better, like drawing hands, guys, got to do them. And like you suck at them, and you start getting a little better and a little better and a little better. And then eventually it starts to look like a nub, and then you got that nub thing going, and then eventually it'll look like a hand. But it's just important to feel that way.
So
keep going.
I want to touch on something that you just said there. Was you were saying you never know when things are going to change, and we kind of talked a little bit about that earlier, of Corona times affecting the industry real heavily. So what are some like tips that you might have for people who are looking to kind of future proof themselves and find ways to capitalize on new things or try and identify new things?
So for myself, I'm a weird person. I don't like anyone having any control over me. So that's kind of how I look at everything throughout my lens in life. Why I built an audience online is because I didn't want to, and this was even before I was in the industry, I already had like this foresight, this ego, where I was like, I didn't want to be like some of my older friends. I have a lot of friends in their 40s and 50s who have dropped wisdom on me from working at companies like Disney and mm-hmm. other places and interesting stories there, and being let go for no reason, and mm-hmm. projects changing and shifting without, you know, anyone knowing why. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to have a life where I was afraid of losing my job always. So even before having an audience was really monetarily useful, I made sure that I had one, that I was visible, mm-hmm. selling artwork, selling prints, making sure that I was going to conventions so that I can make enough money to kind of take care of myself, regardless of if I had a job or not. When mm-hmm. I was working with Sean, I was doing like 22 cons a year.
Whoa!
While also working free, I was crazy freelance.
Yeah,
multiple companies. It was not good. I was very close to burning myself out, and that's not healthy, guys.
Yeah.
But I was doing it because of that worry. But in that same fashion, I left Instagram to kind of focus on pitching my TV show, Primordial Descent, and mm-hmm. other TV shows. Still doing that. Working on my YouTube channel, working on Animated vs. Games. I always make sure that I'm working on like 5-6 things, just to make sure that I don't end up being in a position where I can't afford to live in San Francisco. It's expensive here.
Yeah, you know? That's smart. Always have those irons in the fire. Always keep putting new pokers in.
Yeah, and if that sounds like a lot of work, because like honestly, just becoming a professional artist is a very large hill to climb.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that making sure that like there's artists who are on Twitch who are maybe not the best, but they're good at giving tips. They're good at teaching. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, I used to get this story a lot, because like I started being a professional when I was only 2 years in art school. So I was already better than some of my teachers. Better. Students would tell me I was better than the teacher. And I would tell them, just because you draw better or you like my art more than that teacher doesn't mm-hmm. mean you can't learn from that person. Because there's plenty of teachers that were at the academy that were killer artists, but not great teachers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to kind of like be open to getting that, those nuggets of wisdom and that information. Cause like some people you may look at on channels may not be the best artists, but mm-hmm. they have something to say and it could help out your art.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I can hear my dog sleeping in the other room. He's doing little bubbles. Sorry.
I want a dog so bad. Oh man.
Wait, what kind of dog you got?
No, I want one.
Oh, you want a dog. I thought you said your dog was so bad. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. No. All dogs are good. I want a corgi, probably.
Nice. Nice. Good dogs. All right, so we're going to roll into the Q&A now. I've seen a lot of questions coming up. Keep posting with questions, because producers are going through and pulling them and putting them in a nice document for me to use. So, you ready? You ready for these questions?
Yeah.
Okay. One that I saw that I really liked, because it was kind of out there, from Meteorite_RT, who's been very active in the chat, is what is your wish?
My one wish?
Yeah. I thought that's easy. Okay.
I want to have a studio, man. That's what I've always kind of been going for, is a studio or with a TV show, mm-hmm. working on my own projects. I don't want to be like a studio, like I love them, but ILM, work for hire studio. They're, mm-hmm. their kind of business model is kind of a race to the bottom, because they're kind of pitching budgets or prices to studios to kind of get that work, mm-hmm. which is kind of a toxic environment. That's why you see these studios who make like Lion King and the movie makes $1 billion and their company goes out. And it's like, that's not, I dislike the way the industry is run in so many different facets. Equity is not giving to artists, but anyway, if I could choose, I would want to work on my own projects under my own roof. Very similar to Pixar, owning your IP and making sure IP, intellectual property, guys, owning your show, owning your characters, mm-hmm. and working on projects that you own.
So this, I think, is a real interesting question. Does burnout come with a loss of enthusiasm, or can you be super stoked on something and still burn out?
And that's from Chi-Chan. Still burn out and be stoked about stuff. That totally happens. I always, being in the industry for as long as I have, you go through periods of burnout. I thought I didn't experience burnout, but I was definitely lying to myself. I've always found like there's little tricks to do. There's I work out a lot. Getting your head out of that space and doing something else is good. And then coming back to it, going back to what inspired you to be an artist in the first place. That's a big one for me. So when I'm getting burnout, I will go back to the old 90s anime, like Cowboy Bebop and Trigun and DBZ and all these Samurai X and that kind of stuff, and watch that and re-inspire myself for why I wanted to become an artist in the first place. And that's kind of what made me, that's what helped me get out of burnout a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. So Edge of Night ST says, how old were you when you would say that you actually made it?
Uh, 21, I think. But it was super fast. And I definitely was different than a lot of my friends. I think this is a weird thing to say, but I think that not having art training when I was young, I just had skill or the potential for skill, talent, whatever you want to call it. I have a lot of friends who were in art school with me who were amazing, way better than me. And they didn't make it in the industry. And I think their ego stopped them. But I also think that like a lot of them had formal training. And a lot of teachers who are your kind of your teachers that teach you in your hometown sometimes are artists who necessarily didn't make it into the industry. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of bad habits that they're teaching you. So then when you go to art school and you start getting taught by professionals and these people, it's not only do they have to like teach you how to do this new skill, but they have to break you of that bad habit. So I came in as a clean slate with no ego because I was way worse than everyone else. And I just listened. A teacher tells me to do this, I did it. Teacher tells me to do this study, I did it. No questions asked, I just did it. Whereas I had way better friends who'd not do the assignments. They'd say things like, the grade doesn't matter. And guys, it does. If you look at the grade as how an art director viewed your artwork and if they would recommend you to do another job, that's how you should view your grades.
Mm-hmm.
You think about them like it's if a client got your work back and went, this is amazing, I love it, I'm totally going to recommend you to my friends. And that's why you want to do well.
That's really interesting, looking at teachers as clients almost.
Yeah,
like that's a really cool perspective that I've never heard someone say before, but I think it's really like kind of a, I don't know, I don't want to say like a revolutionary because it's such a huge word, but like it's such a cool way to pivot the thought process to make even like an assignment that you don't enjoy, something that you can learn from and take from. Because when you are working in studios, when you are working for clients, you're going to be making a lot of stuff that you feel you know better, or you feel like this isn't my thing, but you do it for the craft, you do it for your, you know, job.
And you're for the check, guys. You got to get paid. You got to live.
Okay, like
all the jobs you're getting.
I was going to let it be.
All the jobs you're getting aren't, you don't love every single assignment. Sometimes I'm designing boots for a character who's like a slub who lives in like, who's like a drunkard in a town. Like, you got to do that because it needs to be seen in the show or in the comic book. You got to do it. Sometimes you get the fun stuff. You get to design like the super awesome bounty hunter, but that's not every job.
Yeah. We got time for a few more questions. So if you want to ask now. I saw someone ask, it flew by way too fast, but someone asked, do you have a favorite teacher that you had? Or do you want to give any teachers a shout out? Or
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of teachers that I really respected who gave me chances. I would say that the teacher that really altered my future was Miss Brianna Workman. She was my high school teacher. She started this program in school that was like kind of merging tech with the curriculum, which is weird. And it would teach you like C++. We had classes for multimedia. We had weird classes. Honestly, me and my friends signed up because we could all be in the same classes together. We'd have four classes together. And we were like, oh, it's going to be great.
But you just made summer camp.
Yeah. It was in high school. We're like, dude, let's all do this. We have four periods together, bro. And it honestly ended up changing my life because that's what introduced me to Flash and Photoshop. And she was always so nice to me and like really encouraged me to kind of do that stuff. And that's how I kind of fell into tech and art.
Nice. Well, cool.
Oh, the thing was working.
Yeah. So one final question we got here is one that just popped up from McClendon Bryan. They asked a little bit earlier as well. How do you figure out the personality of the characters you create? Because I think that that can be a real challenge for a lot of people because they think, oh yeah, it's a cool bounty hunter and they've got this awesome gun. And then the personality is always gruff personality. How do you find like a good, interesting personality for your characters?
So there's a couple things I do. I will say that the D&D is like a creative workout, guys. Get into it. It helps so much. Pick a character that's the opposite of you. Think about your motivations and pick something else and really play that character. It'll expand your character prof, like thinking about characters and how you view them and how a good story is told. When I'm designing a character, I usually get the script. So I get the script and I can see how the character interacts with everyone else. Beyond that, I like to put a little storytelling in my character design. So if I'm designing a character who's a farmer's son and they're poor and it's in Star Wars, mm-hmm. like I'll do things like maybe the kid has a robotic arm. Maybe it's cheaper to repair it. Instead of get his arm fixed, they got a robotic arm because they're that level of, and it's like a rusty old robot arm. And yeah. I get designs approved where I sneak these little things and I give the kid a missing tooth. You know, I sneak little things that add character in there that usually the art director and showrunners really like because I'm thinking beyond what the script is and adding my own like information and storytelling to it. So if I design a bounty hunter, I'm going to think about where they came from. Did they have a jilted lover? Did they wear a ring around their finger because their wife died? Like, what's the story behind that character? And just add these little things in there mm-hmm. and think about it and have a reason when you show your AD or your showrunner why you kind of put those little pieces in there.
Awesome. Well, I think that's it for us for today, but thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. I think we got some real pearls in there. I saw some awesome people in chat. Speaking of D&D, Kayla K, yeah. I believe I saw just do some awesome D&D art. So
yeah, I believe.
Yeah. But I do want to give us a nice little sign off now, and then we'll stick around for a little bit longer just because Instagram takes that extra bit of time at the end for it to wrap up. But thank you so much for joining us. And everyone, don't forget about the being able to caption the artwork that DJ made so that you can possibly get a... Or so
yeah, don't draw with a mouse, guys.
Yeah, so that you could be entered to win a Wacom One tablet.
Yeah, get that Wacom, dude.
But yeah, help grow your art with that because that's an easy way to get some extra stuff going for your art. But thank you again so much for joining us. And everyone, make sure to follow DJ across social media. What are your handles everywhere?
I'm DJ Welch Art on Instagram and Twitter. I'm DJ Welch now on DeviantArt, no longer Dark Kendry.
And get that name locked.
Yeah, and I'm on Animators versus Games on YouTube.
Make sure to check them all out. All right, thank you guys again. My name is Matt Buholz, GG Matt B, and it's been great having you. Thank you for joining us. Goodbye.